My next guest is on the line. He is William Booth. We are going to be discussing an article that appeared in BizTech. William, good afternoon. Thanks for being with me again.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
I am well. I'm a bit perplexed about this article, to tell you the truth.
Yes.
I read it and I thought, I wonder if they're making a bit of a storm in a teacup here. It seems to me, why on earth would somebody write an article about the fact that criminals are now attacking houses on open days as if it's something new? Surely they've been doing this for a very long time.
Yes, certainly as far as I'm aware and as far as the statistics are concerned, that has been the case. So, I think many agents, for example, who are requested to sell houses are probably trying to do that more online or telephonically. And if there is an interested buyer or obviously seller, that kind of is arranged on a private day with special arrangements that are being made and not just on a general open day.
Yeah, I mean,
so that it's done discreetly.
It's kind of crazy if you think about it. I mean, we live in Joburg. We all put alarms, cameras, fences, you name it, to protect our homes, and then we just throw them open. Come on Sunday and have a look. Take what you want while you're there. It makes no sense at all.
Absolutely not. So that is why agents, certainly throughout South Africa, as far as I'm concerned, have become more cautious. And, you know, viewing is done on a one-to-one basis. And they will obviously, do a proper check on the prospective buyer or buyers to make sure that, you know, it's not some syndicate arriving, even if it's a private viewing, and about to come in and take over the house or take you out or
that was quite interesting. The article seemed to be saying it seemed to be stating the article that this is in fact sophisticated syndicated crime. This isn't a one-off opportunist event.
Yes, well, it probably is a syndicated crime. I think, you know, there's so much organized crime in this country, ranging from drugs to theft to extortion to you name it, everything's run, kidnapping, everything's run by syndicates. It's not, you don't find somebody walking down the road and say, oh, well, here's an open day. There's a sign here saying the house is for sale or for rent. Let me just walk in and go and rob the people or, you know, kidnap them or do whatever. You know, it's especially organized and arranged. So, I mean, why even people have, let's call it open days anymore, I don't know. It's a security risk.
Let's talk about an insurance policy covering your home contents. From what I seem to remember is you needed forcible or a threat of violence or forcible entry in order for there to be a valid claim under a homeowner's policy. Here you have literally opened the door. Do you think insurers would attempt to repudiate claims under such circumstances? How would a insurance policy respond to this?
Well, again, it depends on what the policy says. So, you know, normally with policies, they would require that you, for example, have security cameras at your home, or you are linked to some or other security company and all of that. So if it's a case that, you know, your home is being thrown open, which, I mean, I don't know who does that anymore from an agent or seller buyer's point of view, but let's say it does happen, then, of course, you must make sure that, you know, let's say your security company is there. There is, you know, there are cameras that are operating if something, you know, untoward takes place. But yeah, you know, as with your motor vehicle, you know, nowadays you've got to have a tracker in your vehicle. It's part of your insurance policy, and if you don't have it, it could be a problem, and the insurers might not pay out if your vehicle is, for example, stolen. The same goes with your home. But it becomes expensive. You know, to install cameras is expensive. You know, what a lot of people do in certain neighborhoods, they'll set up cameras in the street or showing on the home so that a number of homeowners kind of contribute to CCTV cameras being installed in the area to make sure that it's, properly safeguarded. And also maybe appointing various companies. You know, everybody in the neighborhood contributes to a particular company which does security in the area.
It probably is worth revisiting the issue of what is permissible and impermissible in a home invasion situation or a theft. Given that you're a criminal lawyer, let's abuse you somewhat. And remind us, what are the homeowner's rights when it comes to defending property?
Well, okay, so if somebody breaks into your home and there's an imminent, the actual a threat or an attack, or imminent threat or an attack, mm-hmm. you're obviously entitled to defend yourself. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that the person who's breaking in has to have a firearm and he is a imminent threat or a threat with that firearm. He could have a knife, he could have a broken bottle. He might even come at you with his bare fists. I mean, people get killed by being punched, and he might be a person who's particularly skilled in using his fists or his feet or whatever. So if there's an attack, you're entitled to use lethal force to repel the attack. But the law looks at it not from after the fact, but the law and the courts have to look at it, what takes place at the time. Everything happens quickly. You're severely traumatized if you're the homeowner. Somebody's breaking in through the window, coming at you. You've got maybe children. You've got your wife in your home or friends. So, you know, everything is happening simultaneously. So you can't say after the fact, well, you should have gone left instead of right, or maybe you should have shot him in the foot instead of in the heart, or you should have fired a warning shot. If you had done all of those, you would probably have been lying on the slab at the pathologist's afterwards yourself. So, yes, I think, you know, we all need to know that you have the right to defend yourself. You have the right to defend your property. You have the right to defend somebody else. So if somebody else is being attacked and you in the area, you are allowed to defend them if it's clear that, there's that person could be seriously harmed or even killed. You do have situations where people maybe exceed the bounds of self-defense. Sort of an example is where somebody has attacked you and he's walking away and then you go and like shoot him in the back. But, you know, again, one must look at what the circumstances are, how quickly this is all taking place. That person, even though he might be walking back, he could be a threat to turn around and come at you again.
So it'll depend on the circumstances, is really what you're saying. Are there common mistakes that people make when trying to protect themselves that could result in them getting into legal trouble? I mean, besides the excessive force and shooting in the back.
Yes, I think one must be careful. If you're owner of a firearm, obviously you've got to be trained, you must know when to use a firearm. But, you know, many cases I've dealt with where I've called expert witnesses who are seriously trained in the use of firearms will themselves say that they might not have been in that situation before. Even though they are properly trained and have been out on the shooting range, they might not have been attacked in their home. So, you know, even the most experienced person might find themselves in a situation where, you know, they are in fear of their lives and need to take avoiding action. So, again, it's very difficult to lay down. These are the guidelines, and you must do this, that, or the next thing. The other issue is, you know, if you've got a firearm, you're supposed to keep it in your safe at home in terms of the Firearms Control Act. But obviously, that is a bit silly because, you know, if somebody breaks in, you've got to say, excuse me, let me just go to my safe, unlock the safe and take out the gun and shoot you.
Sure.
So you'd be able to keep it with you. The other issue is that sometimes you have accidents where people do not look after their firearms properly, that it gets into the hands of, let's say, child, because it's kept in a drawer where the child sees it. So, and then you have an incident where, you know, tragic situation where somebody is shot. So firearm license holders obviously must know, they must be trained, they've got to comply with, various requirements to get their license, but they must ensure the firearm is safe. But also it must be close at hand in case somebody does break into your home and attack you. So it's you can't say these are the A, B, C, D, but one, you know, you are responsible and don't leave your firearm lying around. It can get into the wrong hands. When you drive, also make sure your firearm is probably close at hand. Don't leave it in your vehicle. Vehicles that are locked, people break into them and steal firearms. I mean, I've had a number of cases where people have had their firearms for a split second left in a vehicle, and somebody comes in and jams the vehicle, gets in, and takes the firearm.
This issue of an imminent threat is really an interesting one, and I suppose it so depends on the circumstances and the particular person and what they've been through personally and haven't. I'm just thinking of the example where I'm looking through the window of my home. I see in the distance at the bottom of the driveway somebody coming in. He has shouldn't be there, but I really don't know anything more than that. Do I have a right to pull out my gun and shoot him?
No, not in that situation. But again, one must remember that maybe there have been so many attacks in your neighborhood in similar situations where people have, been shot themselves by an intruder or seriously injured. And then your mind is thinking, well, that happened to the guy down the road, so I've got to take avoiding action. But, if you see somebody at the distance, you can't just go and open fire on them. I mean, they might have got lost or, even if they're in your property.
Or coming to ask for a glass of water or whatever it may be.
You have to be very careful. And again, every case is a bit different. And, it's again, difficult to say this is what you must and mustn't do. But you can't shoot somebody who's at the bottom end of your garden. He might be trespassing, but, he might, as I say, fallen over the wall or been drunk or come to ask for, as you say, a glass of water. So you can't just open fire. But again, that person might come closer. Then you see he's a threat. You call on him. Well, please stop, go away. I'm going to open fire. And he continues at you. And then suddenly, he storms you and it might be too late. So at what time do you then open fire? Again, it's a tricky situation. The adrenaline is going, and whether you fire a warning shot or not, because things are happening in a split second. That split second from him covering, let's say, 10 or 20 meters might be the difference between you saving your life or somebody else's life and you being attacked or somebody else right there with you being attacked. So it's a kind of a let's look at the circumstances of the matter. Let's see what's happening, what's going through your mind, what's happened in the past, what you're thinking about has happened maybe to you or to others in the area. People shouldn't be breaking into people's homes. They must realize they are putting themselves at risk. But maybe they're doing that because they're part of a syndicate, they're prepared to take the risk. Or somebody just wants to get some money. But, it's unlikely people are going to be breaking into houses to get some money if they're out on the street and they need money for food or something. Because, to break into a house these days, you need to plan it. You need to check where the CCTV camera footage are, where's the security in the area, all of that. So it's 99% is going to be cases where it's been planned by an organized group of people going around breaking into cars or breaking into homes.
William, thank you for setting that out. I think it was probably worth reminding ourselves as to where we stand vis-a-vis the law. I think you make a cogent case for talking about the circumstances and motive and all those things. What I'm wondering, and you're close to the case law, are our courts able to discern these particular, do they adjudicate correctly in your opinion, is really what I'm asking.
Well, let me say, in the majority of cases that I've dealt with where, people have been charged with culpable homicide or murder in situations of self-defense, where their explanation is, look, I defended myself. If you deal with the matter properly and, you attune to cross-examining, you have your own witnesses present as well, experts on the firearm ballistic side of things, I've found, and certainly in the recent past, that most of the rulings have been correct.
That's interesting.
Yes. I think just thinking about two cases in particular, which were quite prominent, and that the ruling in the end by the presiding officer was, in my view, correct based on the facts. So, if you're presenting the evidence, your client's version, and you're able to cross-examine the state witnesses properly, you should be able to get an acquittal in the situation where the person has genuinely acted in lawful self-defense. And the courts must always remind themselves. They're not there sitting back sometimes a year or two after the event, saying, well, you didn't do this. You should have run away. Meanwhile, the guy's going to run away, but he's going to run into a brick wall. So what does he do? He can't. He's got to turn around and face his attacker. Or you should have shot him, as I said earlier, in the foot. Mm. Or, you know, you should have fired a warning shot. But everything is happening in split seconds. You know, so for you to think A, B, C, D, E in retrospect. So courts always have to place themselves in the position of the person who is being attacked.
At the time.
And it's so-called don't be an armchair critic. You've got to move away. And our high courts have laid down the law in that regard. You can't look at it as to, you know, in too much detail, because you've got to look at the emotions, the adrenaline that's pumping, the you know, the quickness of that event. You know, it's not like it's taking a few days to take place. It's happening in split seconds.
William Booth, criminal lawyer and legal expert, so appreciate you chatting to me this afternoon. Thank you.